as he takes a third drink from my hand and offers me what looks like bruschetta. Silently, he tells me to eat something before I drink too much. He's taking care of me, and maybe that's what I need for the night. Thankfully, Ted's attention is silently taken away from me as a woman walks up and steps into his personal space. I pick up another glass of wine and drain it before slipping into the crowd of people. I have no business with Ted. My head is miles away from making the right decisions tonight. On the dance floor, I start to lose myself to the warm buzz that percolates in my brain from a couple glasses of wine. I move without care to the Latin beat in the middle of a crowd, trying to forget what it felt like to be in Andy's arms. He came and left, and I try to find peace in the music. If he wanted me, he would be there. The next song begins with an erotic trumpet solo that's sad yet sexy all the same. When the drums set in, the beat begins to pick up, and my hips move on their own accord. I see several guys watching me, including Kenneth's friend, and it only spurs me on. I raise my hands in abandon as I shimmy and slowly bend at the knees, swaying my ass in a suggestive way that makes one guy bite his lip. In the back of my mind, I hope that Andy sees me and wishes he hadn't walked away earlier. I continue to play with fire as I give good eye contact with a few of the men. Jenna is right. One of them is really cute. Maybe I should give someone else a try. A man's possessive hands land on my waist. Even though he is behind me, I already know who they belong to. I have no idea how we ended up in the same place at the same time. Maybe fate. But I don't allow myself to think anymore. Thinking so far hasn't won me any prizes. The melody carries me away to a tropical place where everything happens under a forgiving moon. His lips land on my neck, and I combust in raging heat. I rub against him, hoping he feels the fire he stokes within me. His hands move over my abdomen to press me further back into him. Then his magic fingers glide up, and he seconds away from cupping my breast. I don't care that we are dangerously close to appearing as though we are making love in front of everyone there. I want him in a bad way. We continue our private yet public dance and capture the attention of the crowd. Lost in the beat, several couples around us have taken their dances to another place that isn't a ballroom. We are no longer the pioneers in changing the mood of the party to something much more seductive. As the sultry beat drones on, I long for four walls and a bed. I miss the fire of passion that this man can create in me. It's the finality of the music, with its mournful tones, that remind me of the past. I want to stay there with him, but pain is like a lance in my chest. It has me running away as the song ends on a trumpeted chord. I don't look back for fear I might turn around and run back to him. I make it out onto a balcony, breathing in frosty breaths. Despite the chilly night, the air is hot with desire and I'm gasping for breath. I hold on the frozen railing, looking down as the DC's foot and car traffic continuously pass despite the late hour. Why can't life be simple? I want to give up control and just feel, but I'm afraid to lose myself again. The pain nearly killed me before. I'm not sure I can do it again. I hear the faint click as the terrace doors are shut. A quick glance over my shoulder, and I see curtains on the window panel door segment us from the crowd inside. He approaches from my blind side. A warm body, hotter than the sins I run from, presses to me. I begin to face him, but his hands are on my throat and chin, directing me to face forward, his message firm and clear. He hasn't uttered a word, but I know his touch. His other hand snakes across my right fabric-covered breast and manages to undo the body tape on the left that holds the material secure to my skin. He slips his fingers under the fabric to caress the left breast. Just the briefest contact causes my nipple to peak. He nuzzles the back of my head as he presses his hardness against my bottom. I find myself pushing back. It could be the wine, but I'm tired of fighting. I need this more than I want to admit. The music floats in through the seam of the door, and I find myself grinding against him along with the tempo. He shoves a leg between mine and spreads them. His possession is all-encompassing as his hand moves lower from my breast. I wonder how long he's been watching me tonight. Could his intense desire be born out of jealousy? The slit in back of my dress plays an important role when his hand slips between my thighs and cups me as if to brand me. He easily parts my bare folds and isn't gentle when he thrusts two fingers inside my core. I can feel the wetness flow down onto his hand as he pumps into me a couple of times. My head falls forward and I grip the railing tighter, the coldness forgotten as I allow his invasion. The cars on the street down below don't matter. I want to feel for the first time in far too long. I moan and suddenly his fingers are gone. His middle finger reappears to silence me before gliding over my bottom lip. A second, maybe two, then he slips the digit into my mouth, forcing me to taste my arousal on his fuck-me finger. I don't even care as I wrap my lips tight around it before he pulls it back out. He bites my neck, not hard enough to break skin, but enough to send early warning shocks through my center. He takes hold of my throat again as he works what I think might be his zipper. He lifts my leg with a hand underneath my knee and positions me. I'm surprised when his length bumps against my opening, and I feel that he somehow managed to protect himself and me from what comes milliseconds later. Rewarded for all the time I waited for this moment, I gasp as he pushes into me. His hand comes up from my throat to cover my mouth as if the noise police will show up. He fills me in a way I didn't think I would remember. I bite his finger, none too gently, when it gets too close to my teeth. He doesn't make a noise. He continues to move in me, forcing the railing to make contact with my clit in a way that starts the countdown to my orgasm. With a hand to muffle my cries, he wedges himself deeper inside me with every punishing stroke. He bends me slightly forward, and the angle allows him to hit that spot that shoots off my first orgasm like a firecracker. He isn't done. He rolls himself inside me to stroke my G-spot over and over until I'm building for another explosion I'm not sure I can handle. His hand leaves my mouth, and somehow he has my dress parted so that he's able to cradle my center and move the pad of his thumb over my clit as he continues to fill me inside. The scream that escapes my throat is muted by the note the trumpet hits in the crescendo of the song. Then he is gone, leaving me to almost crumple to my knees. The force of both orgasms weakens me to the point that gravity begins to pull me down. He spins me around and I get a flash of hot azure eyes before he guides me to my knees with his larger-than-life cock in front of my face. Condom gone, two fingers that still taste of me are there to open my mouth as he guides himself inside. He sweeps my hair aside as I give in to his silent demand. I hollow my cheeks and tighten my lips around his thick length. Even at this angle, he can't fully sheath himself in my mouth. I swirl my tongue as I bob up and down him. His grip tightens in my hair almost painfully, and it's not long before I taste the effects of his orgasm shoot into the back of my throat. I see the muscles in his jaw clench as he muffles his own sounds of pleasure. I swallow everything before he finally pulls out. He neatly tucks himself back in his pants before drawing me to my feet. He spins me around and dusts me off. At first, I'm too afraid to face him. My lips still tingle from everything we just did. Then I hear the patio doors open, and I turn around. I'm too late to say anything. His dark blonde head has already been swallowed by the crowd. I stand there wondering what the hell just happened. I'm literally shaking when I pull out my phone. It takes a few times before I'm successful at texting Jenna. There is no way I can stay. I feel the wetness on my legs. The lighting might be dim inside the ballroom, but I imagine my white dress isn't as pristine as it was when I walked in. I'm gonna catch a cab home and text Jenna that. I dare not make a move until I get a chime back signaling I have an incoming text. Jenna, wait for me. Me. No, stay. I'm going straight home. You have a key. I'd given her one in case she wanted to stay out with her guy and come back late. Jenna. Are you sure? Me. Absolutely. I'll catch a cab. Jenna. Text me when you get there. Me. I will. The party is in full swing. I'm not the only person who's being naughty and uncaring of peeping eyes. I worm my way through the hedonistic crowd. Mandy was right about this party, and what I've done isn't me. I don't have sex in public places. To top it off, he left without so much as a goodbye, or even a thank you for the fuck. We were alone. He could have broken the be silent rules if he wanted. Still, he'd never been like that with me before. How much did I really know about him anymore? Maybe there's a reason behind the new name. I would have never guessed he would have come to a party like this. Then again, who am I to judge? I'm here. I push through the doors where two large men in suits stand on either side. I hit the elevator button and pray I will be alone. Luck is on my side, and I make it down to the lobby without another soul getting on. I'm practically running to the street with my hand raised for a cab when a cool voice calls out,
Kate.
I turn and Ted is standing in front of an open limo door.
Do you need a ride?
I almost say no, but I find myself nodding.
Come,
he says, waving me over. Chapter 12. Past. On Thursday, it's becoming clearer that I may have to push my trip to see Drew back to Saturday. I know if I go on Friday, I won't get any work done, and I have two papers due on Monday. It kills me to do it, but I force myself to make the call. Drew's cheery voice answers,
You're just the person I was hoping it would be.
My spirits sink even further with his words. His smiling face pops into my head, and the image makes my craving for his hands on my body all that much stronger. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but...
That damn butt,
he says with a chuckle.
What's up?
School. I'm underwater with my writing. I know if I come tomorrow, I won't get done what needs doing, and I have two long articles due on Monday. I'm gonna have to push back coming until Saturday.
Hey, Kate, no worries on that. You have to do what's important, and school is important. Understood?
Yeah, but I want to see you too.
And you will, just a day later than previously planned. And don't worry, I'll make up for it.
He says. I can almost see him grinning. Oh, yeah? Tell me.
I don't think so. Have I ever told you how much I adore your neck? That should keep you guessing.
His deep chuckle sends shivers up and down my spine. You're not playing fair. He laughs again.
I know, but when did I say I played fair?
I rifle through my thoughts for something to latch onto, but come up empty. Did I ever tell you I fight back?
You did now.
My mouth turns up at the corners.
But Kate, I play hockey, remember? I know how to fight really dirty.
Oh my God, the way he says really dirty makes me want to jump his bones, like right this second. How will I ever wait until Saturday?
Kate, are you still there?
I swallow the huge, heated lump of desire that's knotted up my throat and croak out, yeah, I'm here.
Good, because I like the turn this conversation has taken. What I think I'd like to do is put you in my penalty box and perhaps punish you.
Punish me? How?
I'll have to let you think about that for a while.
Holy shit. What is he talking about here?
So, okay.
His deep, sexy voice has me all worked up. Yeah, Drew.
What time do you think you can be here on Saturday?
Six. A salacious chuckle hits my ear.
That's the time my game starts. I'm talking 6 in the morning. He roars with laughter.
Eager, are you?
I would probably call it something else, Drew.
Oh, and what would that be?
I'll have to let you think about it for a while. His laughter rings out over the phone. Oh, and Drew, just so you know, Louise is all hot to see you too. In a breathy voice, I add, be ready for me at 6 on Saturday. As I'm moving the phone away from my ear, I can hear him still laughing. Friday is nothing but constant work, but the good part of it all is that I accomplish what I set out to do, so I can go to Drew's with a guilt-free conscience. I pack a bag at night, so all I have to do in the morning is take a quick shower and go. I set my alarm for 4:45, and 15 minutes later, I'm on the interstate. An hour later, I pull into Drew's parking lot. As if on cue, he stands in the doorway of his apartment, waiting. Wearing faded jeans with the top button undone and nothing else except his mussed-up hair, he looks good enough to eat. You didn't even give me a chance to knock, I say.
I figured you'd be on time. You said 6 and it's 6.
His mouth curls into a sexy smile, so I stand on my toes and kiss him. He palms my ass and lifts me so we're the same height and kisses me back.
Is this everything?
He's referring to the small bag I'm carrying. All except for the couple of things I have hanging up, but I can grab those later.
Good,
he says as he kicks the door closed behind him. Then he starts peeling me out of my clothes.
These were in the way.
I noticed, but what about you?
Not a problem.
He unzips, tugs his jeans down, and is nice and naked underneath. I like, I say as I run my hand over the ripples of his torso. But I don't linger, because there is something else that begs for my attention. I really like.
Not nearly as much as I do.
Abruptly, he picks me up and throws me over his shoulder as I squeal.
I've been waiting far too long for this, Caitlin.
His bedroom is mere steps away. He tosses me on the bed and follows me down. Kneeling, then sitting back on his heels, he says,
I'm too impatient for much right now.
Ecstasy is soon mine, because Drew is right. He's impatient. His tactic is to make me come, and he achieves that with a stellar performance. Kissing Drew is a sexual experience in itself. I love the magic of his mouth and tongue. It's like stepping into a fairy tale, one that's all sparkly and filled with fantastical enchantments. My body becomes something completely different when he kisses me. While inside me, he moves his hand between us. I know it won't be long.
Kate, I'm not gonna last much longer.
Thank God. Neither am I. I cry out his name. He pulls out, and I wonder what's happening until I see him come all over my belly. Only then do I realize he didn't have a condom on. Shit. It takes me a while to catch my breath, but when I do, I want to chastise him. He beats me to the punch.
I got so wrapped up in you, I forgot the condom. Thank God I remembered to pull out.
Rubbing my forehead, I say, you know that's not 100%.
Kate, it'll be fine. You won't get pregnant. But I would like for you to go on some type of birth control. Are you willing?
Of course, I just haven't had the time.
I understand,
he says.
If you'd like, I can call the residency clinic here today to see if they can fit you in.
Yeah?
Sure, they open at 7:30.
On Saturdays?
Yeah, they have Saturday hours.
Okay.
Stay put. Let me get a cloth to clean you up.
He hops out of bed, and I get to admire the fine view as he walks. By the time he gets back, I'm half asleep. He cleans me up as I drift off, curled up beside him. The next thing I know, I'm waking up to the smell of bacon wafting in the room. Lifting my head, I find myself alone in the bed. After a speedy trip to the bathroom, I borrow one of Drew's t-shirts and pad into the kitchen, where the bacon aroma has my tummy rumbling for a taste.
Good morning, sleepyhead.
I hear his voice coming from behind me. I turn to see him with a mug of coffee and his computer on his lap. Yawning, I stop to stretch. What time is it?
He moves the computer, stands, and I'm in his arms as he answers.
10. I thought you might need the sleep.
10? I never sleep this late.
Must have been that amazing lover you encountered this morning.
Just to keep that cocky attitude of his in check, I say, Nah, I think it was all that damn studying I did this week. His hangdog expression has me giggling. I ruffle his hair, saying, Of course it was that amazing lover I encountered. Then I kiss him. And where can I get some of that bacon? All that loving has made me famished.
Right this way, pretty lady.
He takes my hand and guides me to a seat at the counter. Have you eaten? A guilty expression clouds his eyes.
Yeah. I've been up since 7:30. My hunger overruled my desire to wait. I'm sorry.
Don't be. I'm sorry I slept so late. He starts pulling things out of the cabinets.
Would you like some eggs?
You know, bacon and toast would be great. And some coffee, please. After passing me a mug of Java, he pops some bread in the toaster. When it's done, he butters it and asks me if I want jelly on it. I decline. Then he hands me a plate with the toast and a pile of bacon on it. I sip my coffee and delight in my toast and bacon. I wish bacon was a healthy food option, I say, biting into a piece of the stuff.
That would be nice, right?
It's the best. I polish my plate down and stick it in the dishwasher when I'm finished.
Oh, you have an appointment today at 1. Is that okay?
My brow furrows because I'm lost. What kind of an appointment?
Remember, birth control.
Oh, damn, facepalm. I forgot. Yes, that's great. Thanks for pulling the strings for me. Do you know who I'll be seeing?
Not really. She's a friend of a friend.
Nice. So what's our agenda today?
Other than your appointment and the game, we're open. Anything you want to do?
I waggle my brows and he chuckles.
Yeah, why don't we wait for round 2 until after your appointment? They'll most likely do a gynecological exam on you.
Oh, this is weird. It's not something I would normally discuss with my date, or with a guy for that matter. My cheeks heat up.
Kate, I know you feel awkward about this, but you don't have to. It's not something I guess what I'm trying to say is dealing with this type of thing isn't uncomfortable for me, so I don't want you to be uneasy about it. I know I take this all for granted, and it may be asking a bit too much of you.
Damned right it is. This is freaking weird. Can I stick my head under the sofa right now?
I can tell I'm making matters worse. I'll just shut up.
Good idea. I think I'll shower, I say, so I can wash all remaining traces and evidence of you away now. Jeez, why did I consent to this? What the hell was I thinking? Okay, Forbes, get it together. This is a hell of a lot better than a baby, right? When I turn to walk to the bathroom, a pair of arms snatches me, and I find I'm caught against what feels like a concrete wall. Drew's head drops down next to my ear, and he murmurs,
Please don't be shy about this. It's all normal stuff. Your body is beautiful to me, all the tiny pieces of it.
Then he nuzzles me with his nose before releasing me. He's right, this is silly. He's seen all the tiny pieces of me, too. There isn't any reason for me to be shy now. Turning in his arms, I loop my hands behind his neck and smile. It's gonna take some getting used to, is all. I've never openly discussed this stuff.
I get it. Now go shower and we'll figure out what to do today.
While I shower, I decide I want to see Drew's hospital. I'm interested in what he does every day. So he gives me a tour and then he takes me to the clinic early so he can show me around because he sees patients here too. You really like it here at this hospital and all, don't you? I ask.
Yeah, it's worked out great for me.
And do you never consider going back to Charleston for school or residency?
You know, I did for a time, but then I had an awesome relationship with my professors in med school here, and everything was sort of set up for me, so I thought, why ruin a great thing?
Mulling this over, I have to ask him, So how will this work for your fellowship? You say you want to do oncology, right?
Exactly. Maybe then I'll go back to Charleston. They have a great oncology program, and then it might be time to spread my wings. With oncology nowadays, all the major cancer centers are linked one way or another, so it's not like it used to be.
That makes it better for greater opportunity, then.
Yes, he answers.
But now we're getting close to my appointment time, so I suggest we head to that department. When I'm finished, Drew is waiting for me.
How'd it go?
Great. I have a prescription for the pill. The doctor said it was the best option for me. Can you drop me by a pharmacy where I can also get refills back at school?
Sure.
He takes me to one of those chain pharmacies, and as soon as we verify it won't be a problem, I get my birth control. We leave, and on the way to the car, Drew pulls me into his side.
So when can you start on these?
I'm supposed to wait until after my next period.
When's that due?
This week? I am awarded with a beaming smile that makes me melt. Right then, my stomach growls.
Someone's hungry.
Damn stomach. Yeah, I guess so.
Let's eat. I'll need some food, and we won't eat dinner until after the game.
He takes me to a cute little pub downtown. The hostess seats us and makes doe eyes at Drew the whole time. During lunch, Drew's phone rings, and when he checks it, he doesn't answer, but he also doesn't say who it is. I wonder why. I want to ask him, but I don't want to be nosy either. Then our waitress keeps stopping by, and the only way she could be any more obvious about her attraction toward him would be if she actually drooled at our table. I want to say something clever, but I don't want him to think I'm jealous. It's times like these I wish Jenna were in my hip pocket. He must finally notice that I'm sort of pouting because he asks,
"Is all okay over there?"
"Fine." My clipped tone indicates otherwise. He sets his fork down and looks at me.
"Did I do something, Kate? And don't make me try to be one of those mind readers, please."
Shit, he's right. I can't very well blame him for the way others treat him. Smiling, I say, "No, I'm fine, truly."
"You sure? Because a minute ago you looked like your beer had kerosene in it."
"I'm sure." He lifts my hand and brushes his lips over my knuckles. It happens at exactly the time our mooning waitress shows up. She shoots me a dirty look, and in turn I fire off a smug one at her. Then I lay my hand over his and say loud enough so she can hear, "I think we should have dessert at home." "Is there anything else I can get you, or will a check be all?" the waitress asks as she glares at me. "Oh, I think we're quite finished here," I say sweetly. "Aren't we, honey?"
"Yeah."
Drew puts some cash on the table and he stands.
"You aren't going to wait for the check?"
"This is more than enough. Let's go."
Eyes as blue as the sky on a crisp fall day stare at me, and he's completely erased all of my insecurities about him with that single encompassing look. A hand extends out to me, and I take hold of it. It takes everything I have not to throw myself at him and kiss him. We walk arm in arm to his car, and by the time we get home, my hand is in his pants, and we act like two teenagers making out in the car.
"Kate,
And that's all he says before he sinks his hands in my hair and kisses me. We both pant and claw at each other, and I think it's me who suggests going inside.
"Good idea."
He gets out and rushes to my door, where he helps me out as well. Then he all but drags me to the front door. I stop and think about a quote I read somewhere, sometime, about it not being the journey, but what you did along the way. And being with Drew reminds me of that. I want to remember every single second of the time we spend together, because being with him is that fabulous. I want to inhale his touch, his embrace, his kiss, his beauty, every tiny thing about him. I want to engrave them into my brain so every minute detail is committed to memory. Because one day, when I'm old and senile, I want to be able to rely on those memories and pull them forth and with a smile be happy they were all mine. His mouth is against mine when he asks,
"Whatever put that satisfied look on your face?"
"Thinking about you?" Without moving his mouth, he says,
"Well, let me add to it then.
be mine and Louise's guest? He doesn't refuse my offer. A couple of hours later, we sit in the parking lot of the ice rink. He turns to me and smiles, but then his face becomes serious.
Jesus, Kate, don't look at me like that.
Like what?
Like you'd give me the world with your body right here and now.
I wasn't aware I was staring at him like that, but it's true. I would do exactly what he said without compunction or hesitation if I could. And I never imagined any guy would ever make me feel like this. Whatever we have going on between us is getting deeper. On the one hand, I love it, but on the other, it scares me to death. He must see that it frightens me, because the next words out of his mouth soothe me. His voice is low when he breathes them.
Don't let it scare you away. You are the one person I want to explore. Let's explore us, Kate. This is the real thing. I know it is.
His mouth crashes into mine, bruising it and taking my breath away. He's right. I can't deny this, whatever it is between us, and I can't push him away. Nor do I want to. This may be our one chance in a lifetime to find our own chunk of happiness. I won't let it scare me, Drew.
Good. Now kiss me for good luck.
When we enter the ice rink, I instantly spy Caroline. She's sitting in the same area we sat last time. She sees me, too, and waves. Drew tells me he'll catch me after the game. Kate, I'm so glad you're here, Caroline says when I take the seat next to hers. So am I. So, you think they'll win?
I hope so. Sam's been talking about this game all week. I'll be glad when it's over.
I can't help but laugh. Then I look up and see Hakiho entering. Oh my. We both giggle. Caroline sucks in her breath and I raise my brows.
Would you look at that?
I cough to cover my bark of laughter. What the hell? It's getting close to Thanksgiving. Does she not realize we don't live in Florida?
Guess not.
Caroline sputters between giggles. Hakiho is wearing a bikini top festooned in feathers. Maybe she thought the shirt with Drew's number on it wasn't enough. I'm just fascinated by her brazen behavior.
Oh dear, check out her hat.
She's wearing one of those straw cowboy hats, and on the front is pasted a sign that reads, I'm in love with Drew McKnight. Then on her ass she has written, Drew's number one fan. Have you seen her ass? Caroline is doubled over.
She won't give up. I give her credit for perseverance.
Yeah, or just pure stupidity. The guys take the ice, and Hakiho goes crazy. I can't help but roll my eyes. Drew looks up at the stands, and he appears to be quite mortified when he sees her. I give him a thumbs up. Sam punches him on the arm, and the rest of the team starts giving him hell. Poor guy. I have to feel sorry for him, but damn, that chick is a kook. During the game, Hakiho plasters herself and her double Ds that threaten to pop out of her bikini top against the glass, and it looks like she's dry humping it. Where do people like this come from? I'm at a loss. Drew plays magnificently, and Hakiho plays the part of the hooker cheerleader. Unfortunately, I'm so caught up in her, I miss one of Drew's goals. Damn her. When the game finally ends, Caroline and I run down to where the team is and congratulate them. Drew leans over and kisses me. Hakiho is not happy. Caroline and I wait near the entrance to the locker room, but Hakiho sidles up to us. I'm not sure if she thinks she actually has a chance with Drew or not. It's embarrassing to watch her. The guys funnel out of the locker room at last, and when Drew spots her, he is reluctant to move. I make it easy on him and run into his arms. Babe, that was awesome. Congrats on another win. He lifts me up and kisses me, and not just a shorty either. When he releases me, I say in his ear, just keep talking to me all sexy-like so she doesn't get a chance to butt in. His hand is in my hair, but Hakiho, having no couth, butts in anyway. Hey, Drew, how about let's go out to celebrate? Hakiho is definitely slow on the uptake.
Huh? No, I'm going home with my girlfriend and we're gonna have sex.
Then he whispers to me,
sorry, but I think it's gonna take everything I've got to get rid of her.
I don't think a woman who dresses like that is ever gonna take the hint.
You're probably right.
Then Hakiho says, well, next time then. And sashays out of there. We all can only stand and stare at her. What else can we say? Finally, Sam asks if we're headed to dinner, and we all decide to grab a bite to eat at a local restaurant the team frequents. Some of them are already here when we arrive, and Drew introduces me. It's fun to watch the guys banter about the game, but I notice that Drew doesn't hand it out as much as the others. Caroline and I sit together, and I ask about it. Do they always act like this? Oh, today isn't as bad as usual. Most times there are like 12-year-olds on the playground at school. It's ridiculous. I give Sam a hard time about it. It's nice to have another girl around, let me tell you. It must be the testosterone thing. Yeah, but consider yourself lucky. Drew is better than most of them. I think he's much more modest. But the others, when they bring a date, oh God, it's awful. You would think they were playing King of the Mountain. We share a good laugh. It looks like you keep Sam in control, though. Oh, you better believe it. If he starts acting like one of them, I have to jerk a knot in his drawers really fast. Once I went out of town to visit my family in Michigan, and when I came back, he had reverted to being a Neanderthal. It was ridiculous. He was in the doghouse for a week. I do not put up with that crap at all. Drew pops over to us and asks, what has you two laughing so hard? You guys and the way you act? I say,
what's wrong with it?
It only reminds me of Mikey Farrell in elementary school. Then I explain that Mikey was the class clown who was constantly getting sent to the principal's office. The look on Drew's face is priceless. Then it morphs into something completely different. His gaze becomes hot and smoky. He rips my chair away from the table, puts his hands on my sides, and lifts me out of my chair.
Does this remind you of Mikey Farrell?
And his lips crush mine in an intoxicating kiss. I'm so shocked by his actions, my mouth opens, and he takes advantage of the opportunity by sliding his tongue into the cavern of my mouth. In the background, the inevitable catcalls can be heard, but they barely register as I wind my arms around his neck.
Get a room. Take her home, bro. Do her, do her.
He finally releases me and says,
we need to get out of here.
My head spins from his kiss, and I can only nod. I glance to the left of his shoulder to see Caroline giving me the thumbs up. My purse, I say weakly.
Got it,
is his response. Giving Caroline a small wave goodbye, I let Drew lead me out of there. We're half naked by the time we get home, and I'm glad we make it safely. That would be difficult to explain if we had gotten into a wreck. I need to ditch the underwear, so these times in the car make it easier on us. Chapter 13. Present. Another pair of eyes meets mine as I slide into the limo. I don't have a chance to ask or choose another seat as Ted sandwiches me in and closes the door.
Where should I drop you?
He asks. Flustered, I spout off my address, wondering how I can move from between Ted and the woman I remember packing up and leaving the first day I was at his office. She sits with her legs tucked beneath her. The black dress she wears blends into the interior of the car, but it's the sparkling studded choker she has on that draws my attention. I don't remember seeing her at the party, and that piece of jewelry is so spectacular, I know I would have remembered. Ted informs the driver of my address by pushing a button on a console near his seat. When he turns back to me, his smile is warm and inviting.
The party a little too much for you?
He asks, glancing down at my dress. I follow his eyes to my once immaculate white dress, which now bears crease marks and looks slightly less perfect than when I put it on. I'm just tired. A part of me worries I smell of sex, even though I don't detect anything myself. The woman next to me has no notion of personal space. She crawls over my lap and presses her face to Ted's. I'm so uncomfortable with half her body still suspended over mine that I try to push myself back into the leather seat.
"Now, pet,"
he says, but I don't glance in their direction. I'm sure my cheeks are superheated, much like the core of a nuclear reactor.
"Sit over there and be a good girl."
Is he kidding? But no, she does exactly as he requests. Pulling back, she sits up before moving to the seat perpendicular to ours on all fours like a cat. "She's not here to play," the woman purrs. I feel Ted's eyes on me, but I refuse to look at either of them. I feel like I'm intruding on something that is totally out of my league.
"We're giving Kate here a ride. That's it."
I can practically feel her pout by the little mewling sound she makes. Dear God, is this the Twilight Zone? I don't realize I've moved, putting more space between us, until Ted asks,
"Comfortable?"
Chancing a glance at him, I nod. "Sorry, I probably should have taken a cab. I didn't know you had company." His lips slyly curl.
"It's really no trouble at all."
He winks, then adds,
"I enjoyed dancing with you tonight."
It's an odd thing for him to say with his date or companion sitting right across from us. "It was a fun evening. I wish again I'd capped it." When the limo pulls to a stop and I see my building through the window, I'm grateful that I live in the city near most everything. "Thanks for the ride," I say as Ted exits and helps me out of the car and onto the slick sidewalk. He walks me all the way to the front entrance. He takes my hand and kisses it.
"Lovely, Kate. I'm sorry Pet made you feel uncomfortable, but I'm glad I got to spend more time with you. Until Monday."
He kisses my hand again before he walks back to the limo. By the time I make it up to my apartment, my phone blows up with texts from Jenna. "Jenna, I'm so mad. I'm headed back to your place." "Jenna, I can't believe him." "Jenna, I'm mad at both of them." The texts are coming in so fast. My own reply keeps getting derailed. I have to wonder if I'd hit a dead spot and the texts are finally showing up on my phone. Finally, I get my text off to her. Me: "I'm home. Jenna: Good. I'm on my way up." I've barely placed my bag down when I hear keys rattling in the door. Jenna bursts through like a hurricane. She halts when she sees me. "What happened to you?" "You first," I say, because she must have left right after me. "Why are you here and not with Kenneth?" She sighs and plants herself on the sofa, which lets out air much like her own sigh. Another reminder, never order furniture online without sitting on it to test it out. I sit on the opposite end and face her, waiting for her to spill her guts. "Everything was going great until Brandon texted me. I thought it was you, so I didn't hide my display when I looked at it." I can tell she's worried because she begins to bite her nail, a nasty habit that only shows its head when she is stressed, which isn't often. "Okay, we need to back up a little. Who is Brandon anyway? I thought your mechanic is named Brandon."
"He is,"
she says, glancing heavenward.
"So why is your mechanic texting you on a Saturday night?"
I ask, staring at her pointedly.
"That was Kenny's question."
She tosses up her hand like it's ridiculous. "He also wondered why I had a picture of Brandon sitting on my couch as his profile picture on my phone."
"And?" I ask, because I happen to agree.
"And Kenny has no reason to be jealous. Brandon and I are just friends. We talk. There can't possibly be more. Can you imagine me bringing Brandon home to meet my parents? They'd freak just at the sight of his tattoos. It's just that he listens to me, you know?" She stops to catch her breath. When she begins again, her first words sound like she's reading the opening line of a novel. "It began one day when the laws of the universe conspired against me. My car was in for an oil change, and he insisted on getting coffee for me and me getting my shit, as he says, off my chest. And we," she waves her hand, grasping for a word, clicked. My brows rise, and she begins to backpedal. As friends, I don't know what Kenny has to be jealous of. Kenny's going places. One day he'll be a senator like his dad, and I'll be his wife. He's exactly the kind of guy I should be with. When Jenna gets like this, it's best not to argue. I don't agree, so I change the direction of the conversation. Let's see this picture of Brandon. Hesitantly, she pulls her phone out of her clutch. As she scrolls, I can tell when she's reached the picture. Her whole face lights up. She hands it over. There, with a smirk that spells bad boy, is the object of Jenna's affection, whether she wants to admit it or not. He's hot. She shrugs, and I take in the flop of dark hair and sleeves of tattoos. The boy has a face that would make girls lift their skirts, that's for sure. You like him, I say, because it's not really a question based on her body language. She sighs again. I'm in like with him, she finally admits. Now it's your turn. What did you do at the party? Because you look like Louise finally got hammered and not in an alcohol way. At least she admits she may have a thing for this Brandon guy. So I tell her about dancing with Kenneth's friend, then Ted. He was there, I whine. Who was there? Her face is screwed up with confusion. Andy. Her jaw drops and stays there. Exactly. One minute I'm dancing with Ted, the next I'm doing the tango with Drew. Then there is this freaking sexy song and I'm on fire. I want him so bad, so what do? I run. Not again, Jenna sighs. I couldn't help it. My heart was on fire, and it hurt from all the pressure. I swear I wanted him and hated him in the same moment. And then what? Her eyebrow lifts in question. I let him screw me on the balcony. Who does that? It was hot and dirty and freaking right out in the open where anyone could see. A giant puff of air whooshes out of her lungs. Whoa, sounds more than hot. She raises her hands toward the ceiling and grins. Thank you, baby Jesus. Louise finally got serviced. I grab a pillow and toss it at her. It's not funny. He gave me the best orgasm I've had in ages and walks away. Why would he do that? She purses her lips, and I can tell she thinks I should know the answer. Oh, I don't know. To teach you what it feels like to be the one left standing when someone runs away from you? I close my mouth and drop my head. So this is my fault. She moves over and wraps me in a hug. I love you, Katie Bear, but Drew... When I give her the evil eye, she corrects herself. Andy has to be fed up with all this running you do. So I'm wrong. She pulls back and glances at me. It's not a matter of being wrong. You need to decide what you want. You need to forgive yourself and give him a chance or move on for good. You can't keep hiding away and not going out because you're afraid to love him or anyone else. I need some wine, I say, because she's right. I need some ice cream, so let's have both. After filling our bellies as we teasingly man-hate, I toss and turn so much during the night that Jenna ends up sleeping on the couch. When morning comes, we spend the rest of our day together down on the National Mall, and that's not code for shopping. We take selfies, making it look like the Washington Monument is in our hands, and we give Abe the he's looking good eye wink in our selfie with him. It's so hard when we grab an Uber to take her to the airport. I glue myself to her until she promises another visit soon if I just let her go. The other reason for the Uber is that I've decided to go see Andy at work. He has rounds at the hospital today. Thanks to Jenna's detective skills by calling his office and feigning an emergency, the call service gives up his location. God, I love that girl. The Uber ride to the airport and then to see Andy is a bit long, but I realize it's something I must do. Andy is a great guy, and I'd be stupid not to take this second chance with him. Channeling my inner Jenna, I managed to find out where the oncology department is from the person at the information desk at the hospital. More importantly, I procure a visitor's badge, so I won't be accosted by security as I roam the halls. It's a matter of a tiny lie about surprising my brother, the doctor, on his birthday that does the trick. I'm excited as I exit the elevator. I think about pulling Andy in a supply closet and having my way with him. I'm practically vibrating with need as I finally make it to the cancer ward. When it hits me, I have to stop because it feels like something has a vice grip on my heart. I can't breathe. All it takes is to see a female patient with a hairless head to be reminded of just where I am, and all the memories flood back. I lean against a wall, wondering how Andy does it. How can he stand to be here? It hurts me so much, and I know he wants to help people beat this nasty disease. I know that. I steel my spine and control my breathing. This is part of the package, Kate. If you can't deal, you need to walk away from him. I conjure an image of Andy in my head. He's worth it, I tell myself 3 times, then I straighten and begin to walk. There's a gaggle of nurses animatedly chattering at a nurse's station I pass. They remind me that it's not all death and total destruction of the heart on this floor. She's with him right now, I hear one of them say. Gossip is a fact of work life, I think. I should call Mandy and see how her weekend went with Daniel. I have to remember that even with Jenna not in town, I'm not alone. As I turn a corner, a flash of movement down an alcove catches my attention. I have to cover my mouth to stop the gasp of air from escaping. The wild cap of dirty blonde hair above a blonde sporting a ponytail is enough for me to make out Drew with his lips attached to another woman. I don't waste time as my feet squeak on the tiled floor. I run, and this time it's with good reason. On the sidewalk outside, a blast of frosty air hits me. Snowflakes begin to fall, and I try to decide if I should set up another Uber or just take one of the taxis waiting at the curb. I am downtown, and cabs are plentiful. I head over and get into the first one in line.
Where are you headed?
An older guy who reminds me of my dad asks. DC.
Whoa, lady, that'll cost you. The MARC and Amtrak train station is only a few blocks away. It would be a lot cheaper.
I could catch a train to Union Station and then take the subway home. I have a feeling none of the cabbies will want to make the trip, and it might be faster than waiting for an Uber to show up after I book it. Take me to the train station, then. And thank you for the tip.
No worries. We're heading into the holiday season soon. We all need to save our pennies.
I nod, grateful for some friendly and honest people. Luck is with me. An Amtrak train will arrive in minutes. The ticket is less than $20, which is a steal. The ride gives me time to wonder what's changed about Andy. He's clearly not the person I remembered. But then again, neither am I. That night, I barely sleep and make it to Ted's office feeling ragged. He will see you now. His admin advises. Her perfect smile is a little too perfect to be real. However, my brain is sleep deprived, and I can only hope to get through this meeting without making a fool of myself. My words are a jumbled mess in my head. My points all seem pointless.
Kate,
Ted says halfway to the door to greet me. I let him take my hands, and I give him a professional shake.
Have a seat.
His office is massive, and the row of windows behind his desk give me a perfect view of the Capitol. His desk looks heavy and made of solid wood. As he sits, he looks every bit the commander-in-chief of his domain. I plant myself in a chair that's more modern than the desk and set my bag on the floor. I admire the artwork splashed around his room, and I mean that literally and not figuratively. Each canvas boasts a splash of abstract art. However, the longer I stare, I start to see shapes and maybe objects within the chaos.
You like art, Kate?
I snap my head in his direction. I'm not an avid art lover, but yours is so unusual it catches the eye. He nods.
They're done by a local artist. I was lucky enough to persuade her to part with them.
I can imagine his persuasion and decide not to ask any more questions.
So,
he begins,
I received a copy of your report. It seems you believe Jeffrey and his team are doing a good job.
I do.
And you weren't swayed by your fondness for them?
No, sir, I said, beginning to feel like a scolded child.
Sir, Kate, I'm not that much older than you. Call me Ted.
Of course, Ted it is.
Your only recommendation is to have a set of written policies and procedures.
I nod.
Great. According to your boss, you also majored in journalism. I think you would be perfect for documenting that process. I've already worked it out with your boss. We'll be seeing more of you here.
I shut my mouth. As much as I balked about writing in school, I do enjoy it.
Okay,
I say enthusiastically. However, I do wonder if I could borrow the team and a conference room. I hold up the shopping bag. I brought a peace offering. I know they will be upset when they find out why I was really here. He nods.
I think Jeffrey is going to miss you. He's raved about how wonderful you are. He'll have to start the interview process over again.
I want to know about the beef between him and Jeffrey, but don't ask. I begin to get up.
Kate, just one more thing.
I sit back down.
I hoped you could help me out. I would like it if you would join me Saturday evening for a charity event.
I open my mouth to speak, but close it again. I take a moment because I'm tired and I'm not sure I've heard him correctly. He clasps his hands and smiles as if he can read my mind.
What about...
I begin, but realize I never learned the woman's name.
Pet.
I nod.
She'll be out of town visiting her mother this weekend. But Kate, I really like you. I won't beat around the bush. I want to get to know you better.
But I work for you, I blurt.
Technically you don't, and not even for appearances' sake anymore. I'm contracting you out to write policy and procedures that are already in place, so there is no ethical reason we can't go out.
A flash memory of Jeff's warning about Ted and the sight of Pet on the seat of the limo give me pause. You seem like a decent guy, but I'm not in the business of dating men who I know are seeing other women. He steeples his fingers.
Why don't we see how the night goes? I'm not opposed to putting an exclusive label on a relationship for the right woman, and we don't have to put pressure on ourselves for the night. We'll just see how it goes with no expectations.
Jenna's advice floods my head. If you're not going to date Andy, then give someone a chance. Okay. His grin is wide, and I can see him calculating his win. I almost backtrack on my agreement.
Don't worry about something to wear. You're a size 4, I'm guessing, a 36C in the chest and a 7 or 8 shoe.
My mouth drops. He's dead on. Size 8 shoe.
I have your address. I'll have something sent over Saturday morning.
I think about Jenna and Kenneth sending her clothes. Is that how all wealthy men operate? I can find something on my own to wear. He shakes his head.
Let me, for springing this on you at the last minute.
I nod.
Then let's go inform the team they had a spy in their midst.
He says conspiratorially. I groan, and he laughs. The rest of the week breezes by. I spend part of the time at his office, and I'm forgiven by Ted's accounting team, but I can see the hurt and mistrust in some of their eyes. Ted emails them part of my report, which gives a glowing review and eases some of the tension. By Friday, I almost accept an invite to hang out with Mandy, but I haven't been sleeping well, so I decline. She makes me promise I'll go out with her next week when I inform her of my date for Saturday. Andy hasn't called, and I'm not sure that's a blessing or a curse. He's obviously moved on, but it hurts more than I thought it would. Saturday comes with a winter mix fallen from the sky. Undaunted by the weather, my clothes for the evening arrive as promised by Ted. I stare at the beautiful things he sent. The dress is black, classic, and simple, but quite stunning on. The forgiving fabric won't show the lacy La Perla bra and panties that are included. The garter belt and thigh highs are a surprise, but then again, Ted seems very detail-oriented. However, it's the red-soled heels that make my heart flutter until I reach the rectangular box. Inside, There is a ribbon choker with a large onyx stone that dangles from it. The stone is crowned in tiny sparkling black jewels. There is also a matching pair of understated stud earrings. I don't want to be dazzled by his wealth of gifts, but it's hard not to. I probably have enough time to go out and find a dress of my own. Jenna, what should I do? Her voice is filled with humor. Let him spoil you. He can afford it. Otherwise, he wouldn't do it, Kate. What he spent is probably nothing to him. So I dress and fix my hair in an understated yet elegant do so it won't compete with my outfit and jewelry. By the time I get to Ted's limo, I feel pretty.
Kate, you are exquisite.
Thanks. You look very handsome yourself. And he does. He's classically dressed in a tux with a white shirt, and it suits him. I have to say I'm a little hesitant to wear this jewelry. His finger brushes the stone, and I have a moment to wonder if he'll touch my skin. He moves his hand, and the moment is gone.
They are expensive, but not so much as you would need a bodyguard to wear them. And it's my gift to you. Don't argue. I can already see it in your eyes. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't want to. And there are no conditions on the gifts. I don't expect anything from you tonight. We're just two friends out on the town.
Hardly. But I won't say anything. He isn't a struggling college graduate. He's a billionaire, and whatever he spent on me is probably what he spends on a good bottle of wine. I change the subject. Are you going to tell me where we are headed? His eyes twinkle.
I hope you like the ballet. We are headed to see the Nutcracker opening night. All proceeds benefits one of my favorite charities for kids.
The ballet and the Nutcracker to boot. It reminds me how close we are to the holidays. I couldn't have imagined that it would be a star-studded night. We pose for pictures on a red carpet. I feel mystified how my life has changed in the last couple of weeks. This marks the third event I've been to where celebrities in attendance are not by chance, but expected. Kate, a woman calls. Before I can stop her, Desiree is air-kissing me. Wow, Ted, you look very dapper this evening. Ted obliges her and gives her the two air kisses I neglected to give the fake woman. Her grin turns megawatt, and she aims it at me. Drew and I missed you last night at the White House press dinner. Now I see why he didn't bring you. Oh, and I must get a picture of